You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Alex, do you want to be the very best?
Sure.
Like no one ever was?
I mean, I guess.
But to catch them is you're going to be your test, and to train them will be your cause. Will you travel across the land?
Electro, Diglett, Nidor, and Menki, Venusaur, Rattata, Fearow, Pidgey, Seeking, Jolteon, Dragonite, Ghastly, Ponyta, Vaporeon, Poliwrath, Butterfree, Jamal.
It only works with Gen 1. It only works with Gen 1.
I mean, there's no rap for the other gens, right?
I know. It doesn't work. It doesn't work when you have, like, Pokemon that are literally like made out of swords and shields. I'm done. Give me Crystal and I'm happy any day. That is possibly the best Pokemon game that there is.
Wow, hot take. I don't know if this is part of the actual episode, but that's a hot take.
I know. Well, it should be. Well, it's your show, so I should let you get on, but you know, Pokemon's great. Crystal's the best game, okay? Just saying.
Hi everyone, this is Archaeoanimals, the show supposedly about the archaeology of animal remains, and I've got no idea what's going on today. it's me, Simona Falanga, and with me as usual,
it's Alex Fitzpatrick. We have another listener requested episode today. We are going to be talking about Pokemon, which, I mean, to be fair, if Simona doesn't think she knows anything, I'm a very somewhat new fan. So this will be interesting to talk about because there's actually a surprising amount of archaeology in Pokemon. So as always, if you've listened to our video game episodes before, we will be talking a bit about the kind of, you know, hypothetical zooarchaeology of some of these Pokemon and, you know, going into the lore. It'll be a interesting time, if assuming we get all of our facts right. If not, I think there'll be a lot of nerds mad at us.
I mean, bring it.
including my friends and family, to be honest. Maybe before we get into it, we should talk about what we actually know about Pokemon. Simona, so like, what's your Pokemon experience? What are we working with? What are we working with here?
My Pokemon experience is that when I was quite young, a stickers album of Pokemon came out, and I asked my mum if she could buy it for me so I could learn to draw the Pokemon. But then the album came with some free like stickers, and because I'm not one to leave stuff unfinished, I collected all of the stickers. There you go.
So you caught them all, basically.
First gen.
You did it.
Is what you call it, first gen? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how is that different from, you know, the Charles Darwins, those who went into the field and did beautiful illustrations of these creatures, right? Same thing.
I presume, yeah, no different at all. Yes, so basically same thing.
No, same thing. So this is good. This will make people either feel really young or really old who are listening to this. So Pokemon kind of came to America when I was in kindergarten. So I have very vivid memories of being in kindergarten with a Pikachu foam notebook that I used to kind of scribble in. And once I learned how to write, I used to write the names of my best friends in there. Just like pages of who I thought were my best friends, who I probably don't even talk to anymore. And I collected the cards, and I watched the anime and the first two films, and then I kind of dropped off. And the last couple of years I've been playing all the new video games, so you know, there's like a middle part I don't really know, but like the beginning and the end I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I think I just looked it up. So where I'm from, Pokemon was first broadcasted on TV in the year 2000.
Oh, wow. That's,
Yeah,
wow.
So it was an older child.
It's 20 years ago, everybody. It's 20 years ago. And I hate that fact.
Actually, it'll be 21 years ago, wouldn't it?
Yeah, getting close on to almost 21.
So Pokemon in Italy can legally drink in the US.
happy birthday, Pokemon, in Italy, specifically in Italy. But yeah, I mean, interestingly enough, there is, like, I guess you'd have to have a lot of lore if you have spammed. I mean, I don't even know what gen we're on now. I think, is it 8 or 9, maybe? That might be wrong, but there's a lot, and it is interesting to kind of look at it from an archaeological and zooarchaeological kind of perspective. So I figured this segment we can kind of talk about the more general lore-based stuff. So even in the first gen, the idea of, you know, ancient Pokemon are pretty important, and they're often tied to the more mythical legendary Pokemon that in the games are like kind of the big catch at the end. So you end up having a lot of in-game folklore and artifacts related to ancient Pokemon. The one that I always thought of and kind of thought of when this was requested as an episode was, I think it's either, I can't remember which movie it is. I want to say it's the first one because it makes sense thematically, but I feel like it's actually in the second movie, which I think is the second one used, Two Strikes Back. I don't know. Anyway, there is a higher... What?
I don't know.
That's true. Yeah, we're really, really doing well at the beginning. But yeah, there's a hieroglyphic of Mew. Who's that little? Do you know the Mew, the little tiny pink one? He's like number 151, I think, in the Pokedex.
He says Mew.
Mew. He goes Mew. 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 It's not Mewtwo.
I think I remember Mewtwo, but with Mew, I was thinking of actually the one that's part of the trio of the bad guys, but I guess that's not it.
Meowth! Oh, Meowth rules.
Meowth, that's right.
Oh no. Wow, this is going to be a cursed episode for so many reasons.
Curses are part of, you know, myth, legend, and folklore, so.
And a part of Pokemon. It's a move.
A move.
Okay, so yeah, there are hieroglyphics of Mew. Let's get back on track. There's hieroglyphics of Mew. If you've seen Detective Pikachu, there's a fantastic part where Bill Nighy says the ancient Mew, and it's like the best thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I think about it all the time. And so yeah, there's a lot of built-in folklore about the kind of ancient Pokemon. And then even the Pokemon battle itself, you can kind of draw your own, you know, connections to real life historical kind of comparisons, as wild as that sounds, because some of the games, the Pokemon battles itself are like cultural signifiers and rites. So in the Sun and Moon games, which came out a couple years ago and take place in, I guess, kind of the equivalent of Hawaii in the Pokemon worlds, you do Pokemon battles to kind of do rites of passage. So it's really rich, and it's an interesting way to kind of look at it.
Yeah, I mean, just to backtrack a little, so of course, yeah. I think a better way for this to work, since I think it's been established, but I haven't got a clue.
Yeah.
I thought it would be quite interesting to have person who doesn't have a clue asking more questions about it.
That's true.
Well, I can learn about it. The listeners can learn all about it or get mad at you or, you know, both. So these ancient Pokemon that you mentioned, so yeah. Are they extinct species?
No. Well, kind of. So you do have kind of extinct Pokemon, which we'll get into in the third segment, that are literally called like the fossil Pokemon. And then you have ancient Pokemon that are more basically almost like gods. They're mythical, legendary Pokemon that have, you know, lived for thousands of years. And in game, they usually have like myths attached to them. And then you catch them at the end of most of the games, which I guess is kind of weird if you think about it.
Right. So in a way, are they like almost like in a video game boss fight? So they're a more powerful version of the Pokemon that you have that you can collect?
Kind of, yeah.
So in a way, it's just like you have, we'll say Mew here.
Yeah.
It might be like an ancient Mew that is just a cat that's really angry.
Could be.
And really powerful.
Yeah.
So not in a way, just almost like the same species, but just a more powerful version, as opposed to, say, like, you know, the ancient, you know, the ancestor, as in, like, you know, the Pokemon that you have now are sort of almost like domesticated or tamed in a way, because you are taming them. and then you have this wild.
I mean, it's weird because, and we can get into this a bit, because there's a built-in evolution system in Pokemon, you don't really have that kind of like, this is the wild variation. There's just like one species. So there's like one species of Pikachu. Although actually that's not true either, because then there's regional differences. It's very complex. But yeah, I guess
there'll be adaptations to different climates.
Yeah, no. And I think that's really interesting. I don't really know what specific game started that, but basically in the last couple games, it's been kind of just, you kind of just assume that each new game will have its own variations of, you know, so Pikachu has a evolution called Raichu, who's in the original series. And in the Alolan version, which is like the Pokemon Hawaii, he's like a cute little tan mouse that uses its tail as a surfboard. So,
okay.
Yeah. it's kind of cute. And the most recent games, which we need to talk about because you would actually love it. It takes place in what's basically Pokemon Britain. So there's so much archaeology in that game.
Any Roman archaeology?
Kind of. I mean, it's not, you know, one-to-one Roman, but there's some, like, Bath exists, basically.
And for those following along, you can now mark Romans off your Archaeoanimals bingo card.
Yay! We were saying, how are we going to get Romans into this one? Because there isn't necessarily...
I'll find more ways.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll find more ways. There'll be more.
But yeah, in the most recent game, Sword and Shield, do you remember Koffing, the big, like, purple Pokemon that, like, spewed gas?
Was it like a ball
thing? Yeah, it was on Team Rocket. It was, like, one of Team Rocket's Pokemon.
Yeah, like a ball with, like, a purple hue.
Yeah, so the variation of that in Pokemon England is it has, like, a top hat. It's extremely good. I'll have to send you a picture later. But yeah, so there's a lot of variations and things like that. So it's hard to like look at Pokemon. Like one of the things we can't really look at like we do in some of our previous episodes is kind of look at it from, you know, a domestication standpoint, because there's no real domestication mechanic in these games. There's basically your evolutions and then they might have some regional differences, but they never like change morphologically because of domestication, if that makes sense.
Right.
Also, this is a children's game, so.
But in a way, you are like, well, it's not quite domestication, but by you having the Pokemon and battling them with other Pokemon, then they change. They so in a way, it's as a result of the interaction with man that they do change and evolve. So isn't that sort of domestication?
I guess. Like, if you take Magikarp and you kick it, it can turn into Gyarados.
Why would you kick it?
I'm pretty sure that's what happens in the anime. I think someone finally kicks Magikarp and it evolves into Gyarados. I mean, yeah, we shouldn't kick it. I love Magikarp.
Please, don't kick carps. Carp or any fish or animal,
magic or otherwise.
General rule, like don't kick animals, magical or otherwise, or fictional, please.
So yeah, going back a little bit, Sword and Shield, you should play it, honestly, Simona. It's some people don't like it. I think it's a really good introduction to the series because I'm a baby and I need my handheld when I play these games, but there's so much inspiration from British archaeology that you'll probably be able to kind of pinpoint it yourself. Like there's a town called Turfield that has a geoglyph of a giant Pokemon. That's kind of like, you know, in England, we have a couple of geoglyphs, including the Uffington White Horse or the Carinatus Giant. So that's a really cool kind of reference.
So like, are they looking like akin to them? So like in chalk?
Yeah, it's really cool. I was excited.
I've actually seen neither of those things. I've driven past the Uffington White Horse. I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. Got it.
I've never seen it.
The other one, I've only seen photos of it, because I know it's a lot more modern compared to the... Well, because the Uffington White Horse is debatably prehistoric, from what I know of it.
Yeah.
But the Carinatus Giant, I think that post-medieval is like 18th century or something, and it just, I think every 25 years or so, it gets re-chalked.
You might as well, you know?
Just to keep it still there, because I think it's on National Trust land.
Mm, yeah.
So they maintain it.
But yeah, no, there's a lot of, I mean, I think a couple of the games have very like similar Stonehenge-y stuff, but this most recent game's got standing stones. It has literally Bath, where when you go in, there's like, it's known for its bathhouses that they don't say is Roman, but like, it's kind of implied that it's a quote unquote ancient civilization.
And pigs. No, just like very, very random, because I've been to Bath once and that was old. Oh. 2008 maybe, and for some reason I got a very vivid recollection of there being very colourful statues of pigs all over the city. No idea what the deal is with that.
I've never been, so I don't know. I don't know if there's any pig statues in the Pokemon variation.
Well, I'm not sure whether they were like, you know, permanently there, or whether that was just something they had going on for that year.
Huh.
But no, I was trying to find a pig statue's Bath, and
I'm sure there's some extremely great results for that.
If I got this correctly, that was part of the King Baladud's Pigs 2008 Sculpture Trail, a colourful trail of 100 cheeky pig sculptures.
Okay.
Back to Pokemon.
Yeah, back to Pokemon. I mean, do you have any other questions now that we've kind of talked about some of the lore stuff?
I mean, so like, also, we have these depictions of Pokemon, so in this all these geoglyphs and such.
Yeah.
Is this something then that was man-made depicting Pokemon, or is this something the Pokemon do themselves?
So basically, the kind of history between Pokemon and humans, it's very intertwined. So I guess in some ways you can kind of relate it to the way zooarchaeology looks at domestication, you know, where you have that like connection, that relationship that is extremely important to both species, you know, moving forward. And there's some weird, like, I vaguely remember the whole impetus for Pokemon battles being a thing is that it's a ritual thing that honors the first time a human being killed a Pokemon, which is extremely dark when you think about it. But yeah, so the history is pretty intertwined. I think it's more implied that it was human made, but it was in honor of like Pokemon, these mega Pokemon that are kind of the main part of the game. And I mean, it could be a Pokemon as well. It's very like, it's very strange because Pokemon and humans live together. Pokemon often do human type jobs as well. There's no real hierarchy, I feel like. Well, I guess there is. Humans are kind of still in charge.
But they kind of own them and put them into balls.
Yeah.
It's a bit rude.
Yeah, it is a bit rude. I don't know. There's probably a lot of like ethical stuff we could have get into on regards to Pokemon. But maybe instead we will
take a break.
Yeah, I think we should take a break before we get into an hour-long discussion on the ethical.
It's just too much knowledge. I can't. It's too much.
Yeah, this might be the episode to break you.
Oh, I was broken a long time ago.
And with that, we'll go on a break. And we are back with Argeo Animals, and we are talking about Pokemon. Well, one of us is talking about Pokemon, the other one is asking a lot of questions. You can guess which one that is. And I think this segment, we're going to actually talk about specific Pokemon. And the way we've kind of done this is I've sent Simona about, I don't know, 2 billion photos of Pokemon that we're going to discuss.
I'm going to say, I am super prepared now.
Yeah, no. So I sent them in order, so we'll be able to go into them in order. I'll kind of give you the top, well, just talk a little bit about it. And Simona, if you want to give your impressions of these Pokemon and kind of, you know, what do we think zooarchaeologically we're looking at? Or archaeologically, because at some point, Pokemon just started becoming less animals and more just things. So I think we've got a nice mix of things and Pokemon and whatever to talk about.
Although I must say, like, spoiler, not spoiler, but come on, Pikachu, I know that one. Come on.
I just wanted to send you a picture of Pikachu.
I mean, why not? It's just like, everyone should send photos of Pikachu to all of their friends.
Yeah.
Can I offer you a Pikachu in these trying times?
You can. So, I think to start, I kind of wanted to look at some Pokemon that are literal artifacts. They're basically just archaeology themselves. So I think the first one I thought of, and Simona has this picture, so you can give us your thoughts, is called Yamask. So Yamask is a ghost type, and it's originally based on Egyptian death masks. Sword and Shield has introduced a new variation, still called Yamask, but instead of a Egyptian death mask, it's holding a runestone. And it's specifically based on the Ingvar runestones. Now, Yamask can evolve into Kofagaris, which is based on Egyptian sarcophagi.
That's terrifying.
It's
a sarcophagus with hands.
It's a bit much. I'm kind of glad I wasn't a kid when this game came out, because that would have terrified me. I was already pretty scared of, like, Haunter. So it's pretty terrifying. So then the Sword and Shield version can evolve into Runerigris, which is based, again, on the Ingvar runestones. It's just slightly more built up. So, Simona, what do you think of these as an archaeologist?
I mean, so the first stage of the animal, the creature, do they drop the stone and mask on people? Is that their attack? They just poof, just throw a boulder at them? What do they do?
I don't think so. It's just, they just hold it. It's hard, because in the games, there isn't much by way of, you know, unique animation being drawn. So a lot of these Pokemon, regardless of what they look like, are doing the same motions. And that has not changed since, you know.
Okay, so to me, like, both versions, we're just going to set aside that they're carrying objects for no apparent reason. It looks like a chameleon that's forgotten body.
I see that.
It's a chameleon head with a tail and hands that... What? That look a bit like the inside of, like, clothes pegs.
I mean, yeah. Kind of.
Thinking, in terms of skeletal structure, because I guess that the hands don't really, or the front, the paws don't really move. So are they sort of ossified in place? There's not much of a joint going on?
I mean, I think they're just ghosts.
So it's not made of bones at all, it's just a thing.
No, I think this is a good example of what I think a lot of these kind of Pokemon are going to end up being, which are literal artifacts and not necessarily zoo archaeology. But I felt like we had to talk about them, because it's hard. We can't talk about archaeology and Pokemon without talking about the actual artifact-based Pokemon, you know what I mean?
So you're telling me that if someone sort of by sheer luck at an archaeological site was to dig up an Egyptian death mask, you could potentially put as an interpretation, potential Yamask.
Yes. Of course.
Oh, that'd go down so well. I mean, like, because the other two would preserve a little bit better. Because, of course, yes, the ghostly bits, I guess, will not preserve. But then again, you just find the runestones, where you think you just found a literal runestone. And the other one, well, a sarcophagus. What would it have been made of? What metal of sort? A bit of lead? I'm not sure. But a metal, more chance of preserving than an immaterial being. So
yeah, probably. I mean, I guess this gets more into kind of what would the archaeology of ghosts and possessed objects be, but I don't think we have time for that.
Let's not.
Yeah. We can move on to the next one, though. So the next kind of artifact-based Pokemon that I picked out is called Baltoy, and it evolves into Claydol, and they're both based on the Shokoki Dogu, apologies if I pronounced that completely wrong, clay figures from the Jomon period of Japan. Unsurprisingly, obviously, Pokemon is a Japanese franchise, so there are a lot of Japanese historical objects being referenced in both the lore and the actual Pokemon themselves. So yeah, again, this is probably another artifact you would find, not necessarily skeletal thing.
Because it's a, well, clay doll, I guess, that the name sort of gives it away. I mean, they look like little owls.
They do, actually.
It looks like an owl that's winking at you.
Oh, yeah. That's actually kind of cute.
Owl. And so I guess you'll just, yeah, you might just find the little, well, clay object. So, you know, someone, you know, like those intellectuals would go say, oh, that's just the Shokoki Dogo clay figurine. No, it's a clay doll. Hello?
Yeah, basically, we're just daring archaeological students to write this on their next midterm. Kind of in the same vein, we have the next set. So we have Bronzong, which is based on the Dotaku bells from the Yayoi era of Japan, and its prior form, Bronzor, is based on bronze mirrors, which are actually often buried alongside these bells by village priests. So that's actually a really interesting kind of nod to the actual archaeology itself, which I don't necessarily think you see in some of these other kind of examples.
No, can't say I'm familiar.
Yeah, and this last one is the last kind of more material thing, and then we'll get into examples that probably have a bit more to do with Zoroarchaeology, but again, just needed to kind of touch on these because I think it'd be hard for us to not talk about them. The last one I picked out is called Siglyph, and it's based on the Nazca lines in Peru. And I guess we could probably make a case for this being a bird.
Well, it looks like a bird to me. It's a very pretty bird.
Yeah, it's a really interesting looking Pokemon. I think it's really cool to look at.
But now what confuses me is that because you think, okay, so compare it to the Nazca bird. So you'll have the top that looks like a beak and then maybe the head with the eye. But then it's got two eyes a little bit further down. So it's in the ball that is the torso. Is that the actual head and the feathers and the bit that looks like a beak, and that is actually like a some sort of headgear?
Like, maybe it's a false, like, you know, those birds that have feathers that look like eyes.
Or maybe that's actually its tactic, because while you're there trying to work out what its head is, it kills you.
This is true. As we all know, Pokemon are out to kill you.
I mean, in a battle, I mean, I guess they don't kill each other. They just really hurt each other. They faint. Yeah. Oh, that's better.
Yeah, speaking of things that are a little bit better, let's get to kind of, I mean, the main Pokemon, the one we all know and most of us love. Simona, what do you think is inside Pikachu? What do you think Pikachu is made out of?
Well, I think it's sort of like fairly bit of a given that it looks very much like a rodent.
Yeah.
Because the skull isn't very rodent-like. And then I had a bit of a theory for it, but you kind of destroyed it in the first segment. Because in a way, it almost looks... Because, you know, like when an animal gets domesticated, the eyes tend to get a bit larger.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, to me, it just seems like, you know, that through domestication, they start to acquire traits, yeah, that make them look... Well, not necessarily more pleasing to human eye. That's not quite the right term.
I get what you mean, though, yeah.
Eyes and heads, you do see that in domestication. So that's the first thing that pops to mind to me, that is just a domesticated version of a rodent of some description that really has had some trouble with its tail.
I mean, to be fair, we haven't, in the games and the anime, we haven't actually gone back that far. So I don't know if you have caught up or have heard the news, but they announced a new Pokemon game that is going to take place in feudal Japan. And it's basically like the furthest back we've gone in the games, which is going to be really interesting. I'm really excited for it. But I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that they talk about in game is all kind of conjecture and based on, you know, the archaeology. So realistically, though, we don't necessarily know if, you know, the Pikachu from 1,000 years ago is the Pikachu that we have now. So, I mean, it could be right.
Sorry, bastard, like, meowed at the same time as if in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like bastard would be very interested in a rodent like Pikachu, so, you know.
In her belly, probably.
Yeah, right? But, I mean, there's probably some interesting kind of structural morphology going on. I mean, Pikachu can run on four legs, but mostly stands on his hind legs.
But I guess I mean, do that. They can stand up and like they'll walk on four legs, but they can stand
true,
up.
True. Yeah. And I mean, I think Pikachu, like the one from the anime, so Ash's Pikachu, I think is the only real Pikachu that kind of walks on two legs. So that could also be a case for the domestication argument.
It would be, because also it seems to be the one companion all the way across. Like, all the other Pokemon evolve, and even though Pikachu does have evolutions, he never evolves.
Well, that's because Ash is selfish.
Self-Ash. I tried.
Anyway. I mean, Pikachu also generates electricity, so I don't know what that would actually do morphologically.
42.
It's going to be a lot of going on. Because some of these creatures can do extremely strange things with their bodies.
I'm interested to see the morphology of the caudal vertebrae. Because of the zigzag pattern.
Yeah.
So I wonder, how do you recreate that in vertebrae
format? I wonder if it'd have to be kind of... Some of the vertebrae would have to be kind of... malformed, or at least malformed in the way we think of vertebrae, to get that like shape properly.
But maybe cartilage. So like you have, you know, like the caudal vertebrae, and then the cartilage at the turn, and then another round of vertebrae, and then cartilage again.
There's also a case of sexual dimorphism in Pikachu, because female Pikachu have like a heart-shaped tail.
Of course they do.
Yeah, you know. Because we couldn't put them all in bows and eyelashes and whatever cartoons do to do that.
I would have expected at least a nice pink ribbon.
I want to dress up a Pikachu in a little ribbon. That'd be cute. Anyway, let's go to our next Pokemon. If you're satisfied with our zooarchaeological breakdown of Pikachu, we could do the saddest Pokemon of all time, Cubone.
It's just literally a breakdown.
It's true.
Okay, Cubone.
Cubone.
Oh,
Cubone. Oh, do you not remember Cubone?
Sure, why not?
So Cubone goes Cubone.
I prefer Simona's pronunciation of Cubone.
Cubone.
Hi, this is
Cubone.
This is a great new Pokemon, Cubone.
Hey, you go. This could be the new video episode. Just Simona renames the Pokemon.
I mean, yeah, we probably should have just done that instead of this. But Cubone's really interesting, not if only because it literally wears a skull on his head. So if you don't know the lore of Cubone, the idea is that Cubone wears the skull of their mothers on its head. That's the whole thing.
How does that fit? I mean, is it a juvenile? Is it an adult?
Well, this is the first evolution. Cubone eventually... evolves into Marowak, who is also wearing the skull, but the skull kind of gets shaped differently. It fits more securely around its head, and it like slightly changes shape. So I guess the idea is that it's growing into the skull. But then it's like, so if we found a deceased Cubone, like a skeletal Cubone, do we find its skull within this bigger skull?
I mean, I guess so.
It'd be very interesting. And it's also just kind of weird. Like, what would you say Cubone is? Because, you know, you look at Pikachu and you're like, that's like a mouse. Cubone, is it a lizard? Is it a dog?
I always thought it was like a marsupial.
Yeah, I can see that.
I thought it looked very sort of dinosaur-like to me. But of course, you know,
that's the other one I was thinking of.
The skull on its head isn't helping. But then, of course, you know, it doesn't seem particularly scaly or anything. I'm not sure what's going on with the feet. They seem to have just the one toe, like horses.
They've got these little hooves.
And, what's most interesting about it, it just seems to be able to use tools. So, you know, that's interesting. I'm not sure what bone it's holding. I guess it's meant to be a femur.
Yeah, probably a femur. But is it also supposed to be the femur of its mother?
I've got no. I said I've got so many questions. No, I don't. No.
Maybe it's better if we just don't figure that out.
So does someone he whacks other Pokemons with his dead mother's femur?
Yeah, and then it becomes Marowak. Get it?
Yes.
Marowak. Anyway, let's move on to a less cute and sad Pokemon. This is Vullaby. It's arguably one of the ugliest Pokemon I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I thought it was called Volibee.
I mean, that might be a better pronunciation. I don't think I've actually ever heard this one pronounced out loud. So it's just very ugly.
I'm doing my interpretive reading of it. Not that you worry about it.
It's very ugly. It's a vulture. So that's pretty easy if you think about it.
So it's a vulture. Is it still sat in half of its egg?
Yeah.
It looks like eggshell. It looks almost like a diaper and it's got like a little heart on it.
Yeah, it is basically a diaper. It's a vulture baby. I mean, I'm kind of more interested in the archaeology of Pokemon eggshells because there's a lot of Pokemon that are kind of eggs. I mean, Pokemon come from eggs. That's established in the game. And
they're all ovary, like all of them.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah, it's, but then you can also breed Pokemon. I don't know, it's very confusing. I think I've broken your brain with this one.
I guess what you breed them so like that almost the breeding will ensure that when they lay eggs they're already fertilized,
I guess. And then you like have
chicken.
Yeah, and then I guess there's because my kind of I guess concern was, you know, is there a archaeology of Pokemon eggshells? Because I know there's some people in zooarchaeology who actually do look at eggshells. I believe a friend of the pod, I guess, Dr. Emily Johnson, I know she's done a project before looking at eggshells. So I'm very interested in the idea of being able to kind of tell the different eggs of Pokemon apart.
But then, yeah, like one thing that I want you to have a good think about over the next break we're gonna have in a minute. Yeah. So the ghost fella that you mentioned earlier, I want to know how that comes out of an egg. You got an egg and the egg comes a ghost. Let's focus about that.
Okay, let's take a break, focus on that, and maybe start writing some angry letters to Nintendo.
Prepare for trouble.
Or make it double.
To protect the world from devastation.
To unite all peoples within our nation.
To denounce the evils of truth and love.
To extend our reach to the stars above.
Jesse.
James.
Team Rocket blasts off at the speed of light.
Surrender now or prepare to fight.
Meowth, that's right.
Man, we should have been voiceover artists.
Totally.
Anyway, we are back, and the remnants of Simona's brain is back.
It's the equivalent to Ditto, I believe it's called. Yeah, that's me right now.
I love Ditto. So Ditto is a very interesting one, and this will... I think everyone, we're going to try and break your brain a little bit more. So Ditto is basically a blob, right? It's basically a blob, right? I know what you're saying. Blobs don't have bones. But Ditto can turn into anything. So now what? Now what, Simona?
It's cartilage or some sorcery.
Yeah, because like I think when Ditto faints, it reverts back to Ditto. But if we pretend that it dies however form it wants, like what do you even find?
I mean, I guess you can use the trope that's often used sort of in sci-fi movies. So like when you have creatures or aliens that shapeshift, there'll be always something that's slightly off in the morphology.
True. So Ditto, you know that like really interesting face Ditto has? So that face is basically, anytime Ditto turns into something else, it usually will have that face still.
It's a face of pure evil.
It's very good, actually. Hot take, it's very good, actually. So, you know, you can be wrong sometimes, it's fine. Anyway, let's move on to the next one. This one's probably easier. Magikarp / Gyarados.
Also, the most abused of the Pokemon.
I love Magikarp. I would never kick Magikarp to make it evolve into Gyarados. They're both basically fish, I guess, but... I want to take this time to kind of, let's kind of sit back and think. Magikarp evolves into Gyarados. What the heck is happening internally to that skeleton when it changes? Simona, please stay with me. We can make it to the end of this episode.
Because it's just, they look almost nothing alive. It's just, you kick it and it gets really angry. So it's like, it's just a happy little carp. It's not the origin story for like Jormungandr.
Yeah.
It was just a carp and then Thor kicked it and it just got really angry.
Yeah, I can see that. It's just, it's so funny because, like, if you look at the first couple Pokemon, which are, you know, Bulbasaur and Squirtle and Charmander, those evolutions make sense. They're literally getting bigger. So you're like, okay, you know, they evolve, aka they get older, they get bigger. And then you have Magikarp and Gyarados, which are, Magikarp is getting bigger when it evolves, but it's like a completely different thing.
The caudal fin changes direction entirely. Okay, that could get twisted, I suppose. But then you have a lot more vertebrae, just like a lot more vertebrae.
Yeah, you know when you get older and you just gain like 100 times the amount of vertebrae you used to have?
Yeah, that's a Thursday for me. On Thursdays, I grow vertebrae.
great shirt. We're just adding to our repertoire of t-shirts. So yeah, okay, we'll bring it back a bit. Okay, we'll go from this extremely weird one to one of the last ones before we hit our paleontology section.
Sorry to tell me how ghostly fella comes out of an egg.
They just do, Simona. Listen, we can't explain everything.
Ghostly fella. Yamask.
Yamask. But also, like, Gengar and, like, Haunter also come out of an egg. All the ghosts come out of eggs. You got a problem with that, Simona?
You're like, your house is haunted? Stop eating eggs. Eggs summon them.
I like the fact that there are so many other suspensions of disbelief that you have to have with Pokemon, and the one that you're worried about is eggs. I mean, it's like the most basic one, you know? I mean, there's a mouse that shoots lightning bolts. I'm pretty sure the progenitor of all Pokemon is some like little tiny, tiny creature. And there's like a Pokemon that controls time. I mean, eggs are like really low down on the scale of like things that are unbelievable in the Pokemon world.
Not for me, they aren't. I'm just very personally.
We're gonna be recording our next episode, and Simona's still gonna be on this egg thing.
The archaeology of eggs.
Simona, all the parts of this episode are just about Pokemon eggs. We're not talking about bird eggs or anything.
Yeah, let's not mention Exutor to her, okay?
Oh, no. Those aren't even eggs. That's the weirdest part.
Eggs on eggs.
It's called Exeggutor. They look like eggs, but they're actually seeds.
Sorry, if you say executors, they're the only executors that are valid to me are the ones of higher powers from across the sea. They're a faction in the Dragon Age franchise. Okay, let's move
on. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm not that much of a nerd, so.
She, the episode. Oh, come on.
Says Alex Fitzpatrick, who has literally done how many video games? I mean, this podcast has practically turned into a video game podcast.
We're going to go back to real archaeology soon, okay?
Sure. So we've only just touched Magikarp. I'm sure there's more podcasts. Oh God, there's more Pokemon that can be discussed when it comes to the zoo archaeology of Pokemon. Is there not?
Yeah, I want to talk about Trubbish. Trubbish and Garbodor. Simona, these are literal bags of trash. What's that zoo archaeology like?
Rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, actually, I threw this in as a joke because I've been referred to as human Trubbish before, but I realized that it basically would be like doing an archaeology of middens, so it kind of worked.
So again, on your paperwork, okay, so if you're digging a refuse pit, yeah?
Yeah.
So interpretation,
yeah. Yep.
Trubbish.
Trubbish, or if it's a really big one, Garbodor.
Okay, so Trubbish is the little one that looks a bit like a bunny that has seen things.
Yeah.
And Garbodor looks like the bigger thing that also looks like it's seen things. I mean, if you were literally covered in rubbish, I mean, I would be pretty exasperated myself.
Trubbish is me on a good day, and Garbodor is me on every other day. The best thing is that in Sword and Shield, they introduce mega evolutions, Gigantamax, and all the Pokemon get really big when you use them as a part of the battle. And if you do a Gigantamax version of Garbodor, it becomes a massive pile of garbage that includes like a cruise ship in it.
So it's like dumpster door.
Yeah, it rules. I love them. But yeah, so this has been the part of the episode where I just break your brain. But I promise, to end this episode, we're going to go to something slightly more grounded. And I mean that literally, because we're going to talk about fossils.
That also come out of eggs.
No. No, they don't. Okay. See, we're going to get grounded. There's some real...
So you're telling me that they changed their entire reproductive structure just halfway through?
No, okay. Here's the thing. So the fossil Pokemon are literal fossils. So in each game, they're kind of a staple in the games. So in each game, you can find these fossils, and then you bring them back to research labs in the game, and they revive them into Pokemon that you could use for battle. Because that's exactly what you'd do if you did, like, the extinction of these animals. You would immediately force them into battle for yourself.
I mean, if they were anything like you, you'd probably try and eat them.
How dare you? But fair. we're not even going to get into the edibility of some of these Pokemon. We don't have time.
No.
But the nice thing, I will say, the nice thing about the fossil Pokemon is that they're pretty like one-to-one with a lot of like real life fossils. So just gotta kind of go through the list, and again, Simona has pictures of these, so you could give us your thoughts as we go through them, because I think the zooarchaeology are kind of self-explanatory, but I think it's just interesting to look at, you know, what they're based on. So the first one, we got our little blue friend, Omnimite, which is based on Ammonite.
This one's cute. I like this one.
Yes, very cute. I love Omnimite. Extremely cute.
The little feet almost look like a mustache.
I know, right? I like that. It's a nice character design, and it does look like an Ammonite, more or less, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I see that.
Now the next one, Kabuto.
Okay, Kabuto.
Not as nice.
Yeah.
Trilobite. Yeah.
Haunting. Are the eyes the red ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit haunting.
Also, it's a trilobite that's like mixed with a horseshoe crab, which again, we'll see that kind of more often as we go through these fossil Pokemon. They're very much mixed with other things. Although the next one, again, very one-to-one, Aerodactyl. I mean, that's a dinosaur.
So it's like a pterodactyl that's a dragon.
Pterosaur, yeah. I never really liked Aerodactyl. I don't know. It's weird looking. So you get Aerodactyl, which is a cool, I guess, weird looking, but also cool looking. And then they're like, okay, what are we going to do next for a fossil Pokemon? Let's do a sea anemone. It's a crinoid mixed with a sea anemone, and it's called Lilip.
I don't like it.
No, I don't like it.
It looks like one of those toys that wouldn't be out of place in a haunted house.
Yeah, I don't like it either. Next we have Anorith, which is like a trilobite mixed with an Anomalocaris and a brine shrimp. I don't know why it mixed up with a brine shrimp, but whatever.
Why not? I mean, it looks like it's got weapons, this one. Oh, are they the eyes?
I think it's... Is it steel type? I don't know. I think it's rock type with something else. I can't remember what. But yeah. And then we start getting into the next couple are basically just dinosaurs. So you have Kranidos, which is basically a dinosaur, more specifically.
Oh, I was going to say which dinosaur, but it's like, oh, I know this one.
Micropachycephalosaurus. I looked it up.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed that. The next one from that is called Shilodon.
Ooh.
It is a ceratopsian dinosaur mixed with a shield.
Yes, I can see it is like a triceratops.
Yeah.
But it's got an actual shield.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you'd find the shield for that one. I mean, like, how does a metal fossilize? does one really fossilize is not organic in nature, but I guess what's the preservation there? Because of course we don't really have sort of wrought, worked metal artifacts that are old enough to be fossils.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah. Well, the next one's really easy. It's called Tortuga. It's a big sea turtle. Protostega, I believe.
Yeah, no, that's just a turtle.
Yeah. And the one after that is actually really interesting. It's called Archin. And it's basically, I guess, what you would say is a dinosaur these days, now that we know a little bit more about them. And then the next one after that, I think, is the laziest. It's called Tyrant. I can take a guess of what you think this one's based on. Tyrannosaurus Rex mixed with a Gorgosaurus. And yeah, and then the last one, Amora. I've literally never seen this one before in my life. It's a sauropod. I don't like it. It's too babyish. I don't know. To wrap up this episode, just real quick, I think I just want to leave everyone on a weird kind of vibe. The most recent game mixed up this formula with the fossils. You could literally mix and match them. You get 4 different fossils, a bird, a fish, a drake, and a dinosaur. And instead of reviving one, you can mix and match them to make 4 different fossil types. Dracozolt, Dracovich, Arctozolt, and Arctovish. Also, technically, they're actually based on an actual hoax known as the Piltdown Man. In 1912, archaeologist Charles Dawson used human and orangutan remains to create his own missing link, ancient human, and it was only revealed to be a hoax in 1953. This happened in England. So, yeah, kind of based on true events, but also, no, we hate this. I think that's a great place to end this extremely upsetting episode for all of us. Are you still stuck on the egg thing?
Did somebody use confusion on Simona?
Oh.
Maybe she'll snap out of confusion after a couple of turns.
All right. Well, I'll wrap up the episode if Simona's still in confusion. Or she might have fainted by now. We can always use a revive on her. But
I am going to repel your jokes, honestly.
No. For those of you who are still listening to this podcast, you can find us on Twitter at ArchaeoAnimals. We're on Facebook at ArchaeoAnimals as well. You can subscribe to us, tell other people to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, all the other fun stuff. Tell me all the things that I personally got wrong about Pokemon. I'm sure there's a lot. Send Simona your condolences as her brain is irrevocably broken but from this episode. And yeah, I think that's about it. Simona, are you still there? I think she's crying. Helgen, hashtag ghost egg. See you, folks. Bye.
Thank you for listening to ArchaeoAnimals. Please subscribe and rate the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. You can find us on Twitter at ArchaeoAnimals. Also, the views expressed on the podcast are those of ourselves, the hosts and guests, and do not necessarily represent those of our institution, employers and the Archaeology Podcast Network. Thanks for listening.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV Traveling America, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.